Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your deadly program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Nakuri, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumba Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We're on Yidinji country, and big shout out to Yidinji Nation. And we are going strong here. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your saber calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Otherwise, you can text the brother 045-714-0550 and our Facebook page as well, BBM987FM. All right, to Daily Mob, I'd like to catch up and have a yarn now with Sister Catherine Little, CEO of Snake, and talk about Reconciliation Week on the line. We got Catherine. Good morning, Sister. How are you?
Good morning. I'm really well.
Good. Thank you for coming to the program. First of all, Sister, let the mob know who you mob, where you're from.
So I'm a Little, so we come from Central Australia, which makes me, on my grandfather's side, Arunta and Bundarinya to be precise, so belonging to Alice Springs, and my nana's side is Lurija, so that's the Pradama mob, Yankana Jada mob, Maranga Jada mob, so biggest mob.
Biggest mob and a deadly mob.
That's right. And I'm currently sitting on Boomerang country in Victoria, part of the Kulin Nation.
Well, Sister, you must be rugged up down there, girl.
Oh, you should have seen it. This is a true story. I went for a run this morning, and I came back, and I'm looking at my leggings. They're black, and I'm going, what's this stuff all over my legs? Mm. It was ice.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
True story. This is a true story.
And I'm sitting up being single in the football shorts here in far north Queensland.
Well, I'm feeling very jealous for you, I can tell you that much.
Too dearly, my sister. Now, you're the CEO of Snake. So quickly give us a rundown, let the mob know, Snake, and your position, and this fantastic vehicle, a voice for our children.
Oh, yeah, look, it is a wonderful entity, Snake. It's actually in its 40th year, so, you know, it's been around a long time. And basically what it was is the mob identified that we needed a vehicle that promoted the rights of our children and the ambitions of our children and the need for our children to be safe and cared for and well protected. And you know, there's a lot of different agencies that cross over into this space, but Snake is the one that maintains the constant, and that says, you know, if we're looking towards our future, we've got to invest in our kids.
Exactly.
And this is how we do it. So it is an awesome organisation. We don't have one sector. We have multiple sectors, and all of them on the front line just doing the most amazing, awesome work for our families and our communities and our kids.
Exactly. My sister Catherine, would you be in the space of working with and closely with organisations regarding child safety in that situation?
Yeah, absolutely. So of our primary pillars, child protection is way up there, and, and more importantly, what we call it childcare, because child protection, you know, those words are a bit scary, and they often talk about that often really. Equates to the pipeline of child removal, so we talk more about child care and early care and education, those sorts of things. But you know, if it's related to children, we're interested in
exactly,
it.
Exactly, of course. And how long you been holding the reins as CEO at Snake, Sister?
You know what, I'm brand new, so I started on February the 8th, and it's been an absolute whirlwind. And part of that is, you know, we're sitting on this incredible moment in time, you know, where the Closing the Gap refresh was signed off on it. And in that Closing the Gap framework, you know, with these four incredible foundational pillars, which are enabling us to drive policy in many, many different ways, and in a way that hopefully has more impact for our mob, because a lot, you know, we're at the table this time. So as part of that, you know, we are leading conversations on behalf of the sectors and consulting with the sectors around the new child protection successor plan, and hopefully that piece of that document will actually identify levers for transformational change. You know, those changes we need to ensure our kids, we don't even use that word protection anymore, you know what, because we've put our investment in the right spot. And the other one, looking at a national strategy for early education and care for our mob. And that, again, that's working with our families when they need help the most, and ensuring that the services provided for our kids and our families are actually culturally competent and culturally aware and informed by us and suitable for us.
Exactly, for sure. So very important space that you work in, and so you've got there at the job, holding the reins back in February. So what did you do before that, Catherine?
I was CEO of First Nations Media Australia. How lucky was I?
There you go. Too deadly. Fantastic. And look, they've scored well regarding having you there at Snake. And we just celebrated, just finishing Reconciliation Week. How'd your week travel?
It was a good week. It was a good week. I always use this week as a time to reflect. You know, it kicks off with Stolen Gems. And for, you know, for me, like many families, that's a moment in time for me to think about how fortunate I've been, largely based on the work of my grandparents, and my grandfather was a member of the Stolen Generation. So a lot of the way we have, a lot of the way I was grown up, was framed around his experiences and what he understood needed to change as a result of that. And you know, I tell this story, and it's quite a for me underlies a lot of how I operate and how I see the world. But you know, I found it really, it's hard to frame where to start on this one. But look, I know that when people started talking about the Stolen Generation, I found it unfathomable, really, that a lot of white people didn't know about this because, as you know, we grew up with it, right? This is just part of our story. And I sort of thought, how do you not know? Because my grandpa would always talk about the bungalow, but what he wouldn't talk about was how awful it was. And then one day he started, in his very late 70s, he started to talk about, you know, how he would cry for his mum every night as he went to sleep, the whole time he was in there. And then when he was in hospital, you know, he had stage 4 stomach cancer, and he just had the surgery, and he's waking up, and you know, I'm sitting next to his bed, and he looks at me, just wakes up, looks straight at me, and he says, "You know what, Catherine?" He said, "You know what, that bastard had blue eyes." And I said, "What do you mean, Grandpa?" And he said, "That bastard that took me off my mother, he had blue eyes." And then he started to cry. And he said, "Why would you ever do that to a child? Why would you do that to a child?" And I think about that all the time, because at nearly 80 years of age on your deathbed, that's what you want to say.
Exactly, exactly. So that's how deep it is in regarding our stories of our elders and ancestors and who were once children, and the space that you're working in with Snake. Look, very important. We have this fantastic organisation looking after our young ones, and they are our future, are they not?
They are absolutely our future, and so precious to all of our mob. And as you say, we're a bit different because from a lot of other, well, I guess from mainstream Australia, because our kids belong to all of us. And I think that's something that fundamentally needs to shift in our focus on how we care for kids. Much to look forward to.
Exactly. My sister, always great catching up with you. Thank you for being you. Thank you to your deadly team there, Snake, and a big shout out to your deadly team and your family. Stay safe. And we'll yarn soon, Catherine.
No worries. See you anytime.
Bye, sis. A deadly yarn there. Catherine Little, her name is, CEO of Snake, and it's her yarn about Reconciliation Week and also the job that she does as CEO of Snake, and it's a national voice for our pickaninnies, our young ones. So a very important space. Have your say, Yana Strong. Add to the conversation here on National Talk Black. You are Yana with the Bully One, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Nakuri. I come to you live from Yidinji country here in Cairns, BBM, Bumabrit Media, 98.7 FM, First Nation radio station, and we go across the nation, thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. We're going to catch up with Yarn. We've got beautiful Samantha on the line from WA. Good morning, my sister. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. I'm very, very well, thank you.
Good, darling. How are you travelling? You cold over that way, WA?
Yes, it is, yes. It's very cold. I've got two blankets on.
And I'm just saying to Sister Catherine there, I'm sitting up here in a pair of singlets and football shorts in far north Queensland.
Oh, that's what John does. He walks around in shorts all the time. And I said to him, when he comes into my room to bring my breakfast, for God's sake, put something on, because
you're cold just looking at him.
Yes.
Oh, beautiful. Your beautiful son, he's your carer. How is John?
He's going very, very well. He's busy. He's doing all the housework. Isn't he gorgeous?
Good. He's fantastic. I used to always put that expression on my face, look as though I'm busy. Good actor. Too beautiful, darling. And you're travelling well, are you?
Yes, I am. I am. I'm very fortunate, really. Although I've got this heart problem, you can't dwell on it, you know, because...
No.
I'm going to live to be 100 at least.
There you go. Beautiful. Exactly. And they say that your mind can only have one thought at one time. So not focus on your heart problem. Then you're thinking about something else. Then you're not thinking about the heart problem.
Absolutely. I listened to your program. You know, I was saying to my doctor, and he agrees, that is the best medicine because I go to sleep listening to my station.
Yeah, beautiful. Fantastic.
And I wake up to it, and it's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, we're your vaccine. We're your medicine, aren't we?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you're my adopted son.
Yes.
I have now four sons.
Well, let Brother John know that, please. Tell him I'm not there for the wool, just for the love and respect.
Oh, your program is absolutely wonderful. You know, the children are our future.
They are, yes. And I just had a beautiful yarn with Catherine Little, who's the CEO of SNAKE, and that's the a national voice for First Nation children, and to make sure that what happened in the past doesn't ever happen again.
The people deny it, but Trevor, as you know, I'm in my 80s. And I know it was happening. Lots of terrible things, and
exactly.
I acknowledge that.
Yes, because you would have seen
on the outside,
horrific.
But I'm black inside.
Yes.
That's what my father was. He was Maltese.
Yeah, beautiful.
And he was called all the derogative names.
Yes.
Abo, you know, because it's the colour of his skin.
Yes.
And you shouldn't judge a person by the colour of their skin.
Exactly. It shouldn't be an issue, but that's the world we live in. But it's people like you and I that that change that, and we move on. Yeah, love people from where they're at, and you know, rise above it anyway.
Yes, and you have to be. But my God, you've been around so long. You're the longest generation of people
there you go.
In the world.
We're the first people.
Acknowledge that.
Exactly. And if you are on the same island as us, then, you know, there is. We are one. And that's how we move forward as Australian. But we need to reconcile. We just finished celebrating Reconciliation Week. And that's very important. It's a time to heal, but time to educate, and also have that open conversation and understanding, and to be understood virtually.
We need to be. And I hope that my mother lived to be 99.
There you go. You beat her by 1 year. Go for it, girl.
And you know, it's amazing because she was only 2 months away from 100th
birthday. Is that right?
And she died of pneumonia. They put her into a nursing home.
Yeah. If she would have stayed with
you. But our eldest one, Trevor, I'd like to tell you, our eldest relative on my father's side, Nanu's side, was 108.
Oh, well, you got good genes there, sister.
Yeah, so I'm going to be around, and I hope I'm here when everything that you deserve comes to you because you deserve it.
Thank you, my sister. All the best. You have a beautiful day, and
I
big shout out to John.
Love
you too. And you take care, Samantha, and love to John, eh?
Thank you, darling. Bye.
Bye, darling. Bye-bye. A beautiful yarn, loyal listener, a beautiful sister there from WA, and always adding to the conversation. And look, loving not only this program, but First Nation radio station across this country. So tunes in, her radio dial is locked in there, so it's fantastic. Yarn up strong, add to the conversation here, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
She wrote me. She says she's coming home, and we can light up a candle and pour us some red wine. And when the night is almost over, our true love like a will shine. My baby is coming home, and tonight I won't be on my own, and no more tears for me cry again. Yes, my baby. Thank you.
A very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Nakari, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM, Bumbibrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your Sabre calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, we're going to catch up a yarn now with Professor Kevin Bell about his new role as a truth-telling commissioner with the Yuruk Justice Commission. On the line, Professor, are you there, Professor Kevin? Good morning.
Yes, I am. Good morning, Trevor. How are you this morning?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Look, a very important conversation, and congratulations on your new role, truth-telling commissioner. I never heard such a title.
No.
So you've got a job ahead of you, but I'm feeling in your voice compassion and an open mind for the learning as a professor, yes?
Thank you. Yes, the Yuruk Justice Commission is a commission established only a week ago, and our function is to enable Aboriginal Victorians to tell their story in circumstances where colonisation has resulted in white people being able to tell their story and have their history, but what has been excluded is the Aboriginal side of the equation.
So if you're black, stay back. If you're black, stay quiet. Out of sight,
absolutely.
Out of mind sort of thing, yes?
Absolutely. This is the place where a strong voice can be heard. We will establish a safe cultural place within which Aboriginal people from all over Victoria and elsewhere, if they've got a relevant story to tell, can come and share that with us.
Well, all stories got two sides, haven't they? And it's about time. Well, it's great to have black people at the table to tell their story. And being a commissioner, truth-telling, I think it's a powerful tool. And that should be not only Victoria, but a template across the country, if not the globe.
You're correct. And the truth-telling concept is part of a model called transitional justice. It's appealing, isn't it,
this idea
that society, government, politics is in transition from one thing to another. And so truth-telling is part of that because as we unfold, we grow, we come together, we come to understand each other, we come to understand the consequences of past conduct, we come to understand the opportunities of future possibilities. And through this kind of process, we can end up hopefully a treaty, not just in Victoria, as you say, Trevor, but also in Australia, as has occurred elsewhere in the world. A good example is Canada, where the residential schools royal commission, similar to our own, resulted in very significant advancements in self-determination for the Indigenous people of Canada.
So when you look at the old phrase, walking a mile in someone's moccasins, but by doing that, you're seeking to understand. And then the First Nation people, or black people, who own the moccasins, are there to be understood.
Well, exactly. And I'm not a black person, Trevor. I'm a white person.
I claim you as a brother, my friend.
I will. I treat you as a brother, Trevor. I treat you as a brother. And as I did the people within, I worked in the Northern Territory and in West Australia in particular. I learnt much from the Yaru and also from the Bardi Jawi about country, about people, about family, about tradition, about continuity, about care. And this has helped me to appreciate the injustice that colonisation has done to Aboriginal people, all over Victoria, including in Australia, including in Victoria, where I've got an opportunity to assist an Aboriginal-led commission to do something about it.
So, of course, black people are at the table in regarding their communication and hearing their side of the story. So you must have some very robust and open conversations and truth-telling, in more ways than one.
We do, I'm glad to say to you that the commission is Aboriginal-led. We've got five. One. The other four are all Aboriginal. The chairperson, Auntie Eleanor Burke, is a Wamba Wamba Wegaya woman from Western Victoria.
Yes.
Uncle Wayne Atkinson is a Yorta Jaja Warong person from Central Victoria. Sue Ann Hunter is a Wurundjeri woman from around Melbourne. And Maggie Walter is a Palawa woman from from Tasmania, but has really significant skills to bring to the table. So, yes, in this remarkable 4+1 commission, we do have robust conversations, cool. but we listen to each other with care,
yes.
understand each other's
respect.
Perspectives,
yep.
fully knowing that we've got an important job to do, and supporting each other, caring for each other, and helping each other out to understand so that we can perform that job.
And so with this so-called vehicle you're driving into the future, where are we driving this vehicle to, Professor?
Self-determination through a treaty.
Yes, beautiful.
That's ultimately the objective. This is, truth-telling is a good in itself, don't get me wrong. Harm has been done, hurt has been suffered.
Yep.
One way of dealing with that is by telling truth, obtaining reparation, having recognition through various means, including memorialisation and so on. But we want to advance society, Aboriginal society, in the plural, in Victoria, towards self-determination so they can continue to be healthy, to thrive
yes.
socially, politically, productively, in their families, have real control over education, health, have their law recognised. All of this is possible here. It's been possible elsewhere, New Zealand, Canada, and so on. So that's the ultimate goal.
Well, I've always said Australia's got a history, black or white, good or bad, but the history is a history, and we need to own it. And as one, Australians, we can then go forward.
We do. We do need to own it. You're referring, I think, to the fact that there are two sides to this, black and white, and we've been speaking about the black side, the Aboriginal side, but the white side's important too.
Exactly.
It's very important that it's not not just that Aboriginal people speak with voice, but that white people listen with ears.
Sure.
I'm asking people from the white community to come with good intent and generous spirit to this process, to understand that it is an act of reconciliation of a really profound kind, to listen to those who've been harmed,
yes.
And to reach out the hand of friendship, respect and equality, particularly in the human rights age, where the underpinning for this whole process is human rights based, as it is obviously on respect for equal dignity. So that's my hope. I think that Victoria is ready for this as a community.
Good.
Certainly that's what the polling shows, and certainly that's the belief of the government and those Aboriginals who have assisted in setting this mechanism up.
Well, Dr. Professor, I will say that we'll be watching Yuruk Justice Commission very closely.
Thank you
very much for sharing.
I think you've
got a beautiful team there. How you say, teamwork makes the dream work. Go forth and enjoy that journey.
Thank you very much, Trevor. I really appreciate your interest and your support.
Professor, you take care. All the best. Thank you.
Okay, all the best. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Professor Kevin Bell, and talking about his new role as Truth-Telling Commissioner, and working closely with the Yuruk Justice Commission, and he did make mention of Dr. Wayne Atkinson, deadly brother, Yoda Yoda Man, also Miss Sue Ann Hunter, Widgery and Gurul Ilum Rawam woman, recognises leaders in trauma and healing practices, and heard her speak many times. Also, Professor Maggie Walter. So it's beautiful people at the table regarding moving forward and vehicle truth telling. And there it is, truth will set you free. Have your say, Jan Armstrong. Add to the conversation here, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
I'm not afraid to die.
To Daily Mob, welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, Yidinji country. And great to be sharing with you, Mob. We go across the country thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. So have your saying yarn up strong on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Add to the conversation, Mob, too deadly. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Emeritus Professor Lyndall Ryan, AM, Faha, University of Newcastle historian, talking about Black Man's Point massacre of Burpai people could soon be formally acknowledged. A very important conversation. And on the line, we do have Emeritus Professor there. Lyndall, you there? Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the program. Sister, before we start, let the mob know who you mob, where you're from.
I'm living in a walkable people country at the moment, and I was born in Eora country in Sydney.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you very much. Look, a very important conversation. Black Man's Point massacre of Burpai people could soon be formally acknowledged. So shed some light, please, with this fantastic acknowledgement.
Yes. It's a very interesting event. We've now got a date for it in 1826. It's just Black Man's Point is part of the Hastings River at Port Macquarie. Mm. And Port Macquarie was a convict station set up in the early 1820s, and we now realise that the people there were probably killed by a group soldiers who were stationed at Port Macquarie penals.
And so, and with this finding, well, it's come to the surface in regard to the acknowledgement. What was the push and who was behind to bring this to the table?
Well, we think that happened simply because the Aboriginal people were there.
Yes.
We think that the soldiers were women for sexual purposes, and we think that the soldiers went in and just probably a nighttime attack on the camp. I don't think that 300 people were killed, but certainly a great number were.
Mm.
We've still got more research to do. We've only got one reference to it at the moment, but it's a very good one. It's a by the surveyor, the white surveyor who lived in that area in the 1820s, but I need to do some more research, but it's a very good start.
Yes. And when we talk about archaeologists and we're talking about historians, the number one tool.
It would be good to get some archaeologists to be able to work with the community.
Yes.
Perhaps to excavate the site, but that would take a while.
But the number one tool we're talking about here is the Burpai oral history, yes?
Yes, there is some oral history. It's a history, and so we've still got a fair amount of work to do, but it's a very important start.
Yes.
A very important start.
And of course, the Burpai people are at the table, front and centre. Truth telling? We've got the traditional owners at the table as well in regard to this finding and this acknowledgement, yes?
Yes, definitely. And I think it's very important that everybody works together in trying to unravel this, you know, very important massacre. There's no doubt about that.
Mm.
And I think it helped to a lot of what happened around that part of the New South Wales coast. At that time, we're beginning to find more information, and I think over the next year we'll be able to build up a very clear picture of what happened there in such a long time ago.
Yes.
Too. And it's very important that the oral history of that time has remained so important with the Burpai people.
Professor Lyndall, in regard to the space, the area, the land we're talking about, is it open land or is there building structures on the land or around it?
It's open land. It's on a spit in the in the Hastings River, and it's an area where Aboriginal people would have camped because it's open. They can readily go fishing. There's opportunities for hunting, and it's a very safe area.
Yes,
and I think it would have been, you know, when you go and see the site, you think, oh, this is where Aboriginal people would have been. You know,
yeah, sure.
We know that now.
And we're talking back in 1800s, early in 1800s, and it's so profound that there was no buildings or structures, you know, built on this area, and that's our ancestors speaking to us, you know, or from the grave.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. So I think it's a site that would be very, if it were possible, for some archaeological work to be done, I think it could yield some important information.
Yes. Well, look, thank you very much for sharing. Please do keep in touch, and we'll keep in close eye on this acknowledgement. And a big shout out there to the Burpai people. And thank you very much, Professor Lindell.
Thank you for having me.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
A very important conversation, and sad, but also happy in the sense of the acknowledgement and the protection of the land there, and the acknowledgement of Black Man's Point Massacre, Burpai, where people and the traditional owners could soon be formally acknowledged of their ancestors and the atrocity that happened to their ancestors. And look, we are moving forward in the 21st century, and the old phrase, oil always rises to the top. We are finding things that are very important to First Nation people and to Australia as a whole. And here it is, after just the end of Reconciliation Week, this story comes to the table. So, like I said, the synchronicity of it all, powerful, powerful, powerful. Have your say, Jan Armstrong, add to the conversation here, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
G'day folks, Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it.
Sebastian here, hanging up on our National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7.
I remember the day.
Yeah, beautiful track there, Galuka, Saltwater Band here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, Yarn Up Strong, 1-800-422-416. That's the number you need to call. Yarn with yours truly, Trevor Tim Trendy, Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM Bumbleberry Media, 98.7 FM, your dingy country, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. So Yarn Up Strong, your mob, too deadly. We're going to catch up a yarn there with Professor Dorothy Keefe, CEO of Cancer Australia, and we can get the facts on the vax for Australia's first peoples affected by cancer. Very important conversation on the line. Professor Dorothy, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Where are you based, my dear?
I am based in Sydney.
Sydney, New South Wales.
New South Wales on Gadigal country.
Gadigal country,
your
yes.
Nation.
Beautiful, fantastic. So, look, a very important conversation. Facts on the vax for Australia's first peoples affected by cancer. Unknown territory regarding the vaccine, COVID-19, or all the above, and how it affects people in regards to the fear or what will come, the outcome, the symptoms, whatever. Where are we at regarding first peoples affected by cancer and the vaccine?
Thank you, Trevor. Can I first start by acknowledging that today is Mabo Day?
Thank you.
How important that court case was for recognising that terra nullius was always...
Thank you. Thank you so very much. And you jumped the gun because I'm about to go into that, but beautiful. It is a very important day. Mabo Day is marked on annually on 3 June. And so thank you very much, yes.
That's okay, Trevor. So, yes, back to... why we're talking today, the facts on the vax. People with cancer have a bit more risk of catching COVID-19 than people who don't have cancer or haven't had cancer. And then if they get COVID-19, it tends to be a bit worse. So
yes.
What we're trying to do is encourage everyone who's got cancer or had cancer to go and get the vaccine to protect themselves and protect the community.
Well, their immune systems will be down, and if they happen to get COVID-19, it could be dire straits.
That's exactly right. And while their immune system is down, sometimes the vaccine doesn't work quite as well as it does for people whose immune system's good. But if you get both doses, then the vaccine works. So it's really important to get and have two doses.
Sure. We've got that fear regarding the... Varicose, where are we at with that, and what do you say to people with cancer about that?
About the fear of, sorry, I missed that last bit.
I believe the varicose?
Oh, the vaccine?
Yes.
People a bit frightened of the vaccine. Look, lots of people have concerns, and that's why we've done, made these questions, these frequently asked questions, and we've made them in collaboration with Professor Gail Garvey at the Menzies School of Health Research, because she's a proud Indigenous woman and she knows how to get the wording right to make sure we can answer questions properly. And she's helped us with what the questions are and how to answer them. So we've got these charts that are online on our website and that we're going to send out to all the health places that answer all the questions you might have about why, you know, what your fears are and why it's sensible to have the vaccine. And we've got a little video as well that we put out on social
Lovely.
Media.
And that's all on your webpage, cancerAustralia.gov.au?
That's the one.
Fantastic.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, knowledge is power, and knowledge sets your mind at ease, but also keeps your spirit strong as well.
That's exactly right. And, you know, there's a lot of rubbish out there in the interweb and the wild world, and so we just need to make sure that people know that they can get trusted advice and fact-based evidence from our website.
Yes. Well, that's fantastic. Well, thank you very much for sharing. And CEO, you're stating the fact that for our First Nation people to go and get the vaccine, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. We're all in this together with the
COVID. Well, we are, yes.
We get the vaccine.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you for the yarn, my dear. You take care. All the best to you. And we'll yarn soon.
Yeah, sounds lovely.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
a deadly yarn and a very important yarn regarding First Nation people and regarding the vaccine. It says facts on the vax for Australia's first people affected by cancer. And that's Professor Dorothy Keith, CEO of Cancer Australia. And look, highly recommends, or well, do recommend for you to go and get your vaccine. So it's about important that your immune systems are down and it could be weaker. And if you do happen to get COVID-19, then it could make things, like I said, put you in a dire straits situation. So very important to take care of yourself. Do what you need to do for your family and friends. Share, and beautiful sister that did mention about Mabo Day, and like to make that acknowledgement as well. Mabo Day is marked annually on 3 June, commemorating Muir Island, Uncle Eddie Corky Mabo, and his successful efforts to overturn the legal fiction of terra nullius, or land belonging to no one, which wasn't the case. And so this is what is the Mabo case? Well, short for Mabo and others versus Queensland. And the Mabo case, led by Uncle Eddie Corky Mabo, an activist for the 1967 referendum, fought the legal concept that Australia and the Torres Strait Islands were not owned by Indigenous people because of they did not use the land in ways of Europeans believe constituted some kind of legal possession, despite the fact that the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island peoples occupied the land, spoke their own languages, had their own laws and customs before the British arrived in 1788. Terra nullius was an attempt to give a legitimate for the British and Australian governments to allow the depossession of all Indigenous peoples of their land. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island people also had and continue to have a strong connection to country, the Australian land. And significant of all, the Mabo case was heard over 10 years, starting in the Queensland Supreme Court, and progressed through to the High Courts of Australia. Following the Mabo decision, Australia's federal parliament passed the Native Title Act in 1993, which established the legal framework for native title claims throughout Australia by Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. Sadly, Uncle Eddie Mabo died 5 months before the historic decision came on June 3rd, 1992. That native title did exist, and it was up to the people of Muir to determine who owned the land, together with the Reverend David Pussey and Sam Pussey, deceased, James Rice, deceased, Cecilia Mabo Sully, deceased, and Barbara Hocking, deceased. He was posthumous about awarded the Australian Human Rights Medal in the Human Rights and Equality Opportunity Commission Awards. And so in 2015, 23 years after the decision, Eddie Mabo was honoured by the Sydney Observatory in a star naming ceremony. A fitting and culturally significant moment in our nation's history, residing within the Sydney Southern Star catalogue. The Mabo Star not only recognises Eddie's dedication, but pays tribute to the importance of astronomy to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island people. So, yes, acknowledge Uncle Eddie Mabo with us in spirit and to his beautiful family. And that set the benchmark in regarding a native title in this country. We, the first people, are here strong in the 21st century and 60,000 years, and here for another 60,000 more. We ain't going nowhere. Well, it's come to the time where Murray got to sign off. Your mob, I thank you very much for your company. Big shout out to Yarrabah. Good morning, your mob, and Too Deadly. Both State of Origin shields will be on display at Jalara Oval over there at Yarrabah, and that's happening today at 4 p.m. So all community members welcome. So if you want to see those deadly shields from the State of Origin, with the State of Origin kicking off for 2021 next Wednesday in Townsville, packed capacity, no more seats available, first and best dress. And if you missed out, then you may have to wait for Suncorp in a couple of weeks time, and then back in Sydney. But look, it's back again. But thank you very much for the yarn, you're off for your conversation and for your company. Stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. And as we just had a deadly talk there with Professor Dorothy Keefe, don't forget we do live in a pandemic world at the moment in regard to COVID-19. Stay safe, you mob. And we'll talk soon. All the best.